And gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally Rush 89 FM in Hamilton. We have a wonderful archive section available if you missed part of the show or you just kind of want to download it and keep it for your personal records at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. We have a fabulous guest for you, ladies and gentlemen. In fact, this was a person who was recommended to me by my good friend Jonathan Eisen, and he said he would be basically the best interview that we would ever have on this show. High praise and indeed. Welcome to the show, Calvin Alp.
G'day, guys.
All right, spirited right. Already. Hey, now, Calvin, I'd like you to just lay it down. Who are you, and what kind of stuff have you been getting into over your assorted history?
I'll give you a quick synopsis. Never been one to follow the crowd. Always seem to go against the grain. It depends on who you ask. It will depend, of course, who I am. Type my name into Google, you'd think I was a devil spawn itself. Other people either love me, they hate me. To me, it doesn't really matter as long as I do what I do and I try to help as many people as I can on the way through. Certainly those who've got something to gain by misery of others that have something to worry about.
And apparently you're quite infamous in this country. There was I was told that you, in fact, had an armed contingent outside BNZ Bank at one point. Is that true?
Oh, no, the stories have been pretty wild. There was a group of us, 96, 97, all former military. So I wasn't in the military a majorly long time. Most of my military training came after the fact, after I left the New Zealand Army. Of where I was at Linton Military Camp, 1 RNZIR, 1st Battalion. Left there, approached, we were trained. We carried out a few jobs overseas. Came back and thought, you know, this country's in a hell of a mess. Let's try to change it. Let's try to influence it, knowing all along that there's been a hell of a lot of people out there all fighting different parts of the spectrum. You know, we all go off on tangents and in groups. Some people want to fight the tax man and string him up. Others want to grab a politician and hang him from the nearest lamppost. Others want to do all sorts of things. And we all seem to be attacking omnidirectional. No one ever actually gets very far. The protests, you know, we grab our little placards, we write our little signs on there, we go down the street, and all we're left with at the end of the day is a whole lot of sheep who've just gone home again after feeling like they've done themselves a favour, vented their spleens, and really achieved what amounts to nothing. I mean, you get nothing from the government that they aren't prepared to anyway. Case in point, if I wanted to raise property taxes by 10%, being the government, I'd tell you that I'm going to raise it 20%. What happens? I'll come back. Because that's important. It'll give you basically a state of my mindset.
All right, cool. Our guest is Calvin Alp, ladies and gentlemen. Google him. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know. It's gonna rain, rain, rain. Yeah.
back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the Vinny Eastwood Show.com. Also coming out on Rush 89 FM in Hamilton and various other radio stations around the world, which is very, very, well, we're quite happy about that, really, because this kind of information, you won't hear it on mainstream media, let's be honest. And you do need to hear it. Need to. All right? It's like a survival mechanism for your brain. Our very special guest is Calvin Alp. And you were talking about the banking system or something before we came onto the break there, Calvin?
Well, it's a typical ploy of a government, and why, you know, a lot of people seem to feel like every time they'll do a protest and they get something that falls to their favour, all of a sudden they're wrapped, and it's like they feel their voice can actually accomplish something. Well, really, it doesn't accomplish stuff all. I mean, I was talking about a property tax. If I was the government and I wanted to raise the property tax by 10%, I'll tell you, the public, it's going up by 20%. Automatically, that will spark a whole lot of protests. It'll have you all out on the streets screaming blue murder. And then after a little while of letting it seethe away for a while, I will say, you're right, we'll drop it to 10. You'll all go up in chairs. You'll say, yes, our voices were heard. Democracy reigns. And I'll get everything I wanted. And I'll implement a tax you never wanted to begin with. But you're happy that it's 10%. You know? Very easy.
Yep, because people compromise all the time, don't they? They just...
Always.
They're happy with second best.
Absolutely always.
Well, it's the thing, you know, if you endlessly compromise, you wind up with nothing. Compromise is when one person gets something and another person gets something. But, you know, what's actually happening now in our society, compromise is when you get nothing and everything gets taken off you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, continue.
Sorry, Calvin. No, go ahead.
I was just saying, I heard your guest, previous guest, good speaker, actually, who was talking about, you know, you guys talked about education, health, global warming, all sorts of stuff. I myself have had a lot of spirited debates about those particular subjects with complete dorks. You know, you can't describe them as anything else. I mean, I said, look, anyone who does third form science can prove global warming to be completely wrong. I mean, most of the Arctic ice is floating in the water. Therefore, displacement, the volume displacement's already taken place. So even if it all melts, the water level's not going to rise one single millimeter. Then it just leaves the ice on the land. Take the circumference of the Earth, the thickness of the ice, and if it was to all completely melt, it'll rise by no more globally by 0.6 of a meter at the very, very outside. You're not going to sprout gills and all die from a watery death. You know, it's impossible. Look at carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is needed for plants, trees, and things of that nature. That's our food chain. But the greenies, the watermelon party especially, I call them watermelon party because they're green on the outside, communist red on the inside. And they'll all have you believe that we need to get rid of carbon dioxide. Sure, let's do that. Let's kill off our food supply and our animals that eat the grass and we eat the animals, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, let's get rid of carbon dioxide and die. I mean, if people really want to be healthy, they really want to ensure life continues, et cetera, stop polluting the bloody planet. It's quite simple. Get rid of pollution. It's got nothing to do with carbon dioxide. There's an equilibrium here. We keep polluting things.
Yeah.
We keep diseasing the planet. The diseased planet then infects us. We then start getting all sorts of illness known to man. And then you've got the pharmaceutical companies making billions of dollars off this illness maintenance system. Nothing to do with the health system. They're not interested in health. They're interested in a steady supply of sick people so they can push their drugs down your throat and make billions and billions and billions of dollars a year. And by doing that, we will then also create new illnesses we're going to have to come up with drugs for from the side effects. So what a way to make money. It's like a bloody casino.
I know.
It's something they need it to be sustainable.
This argument's like a guillotine. It's pretty clear cut.
they want everything to be, like you say, they want a steady stream of sick people, just like the police want a steady stream of crime. Just want, you know, they're all industry. They've all been turned into industries. No one's interested in the root causes. And if someone like yourself wants to go and attack the root causes of the problems in society and actually make a better world and help people, they'll call you a nut. They'll say you're out of the paradigm, or you're too extreme or something.
Or a white supremacist and a multi-radical. Now, how do you get that? That's sort of an oxymoron, isn't it? But if I was an extremist like a white supremacist and I was an extremist like a multi-radical, wouldn't that be perfectly balanced? It's like yin-yang. Fits together perfectly. That'd be balanced, surely.
Yeah, that means you care about, the rights of all peoples effectively, doesn't it?
Exactly right.
Can't have that.
Oh, exactly. No, we certainly can't have that. Let's take this guy to the nut house,
I've always said that the key to balance is being able to swing to either extreme and being able to come back to the centre again,
Oh, exactly. It's exactly right. I mean, watching what they push in the mainstream media is interesting. I mean, and you can tie it all back to money. The whole lot comes back to money. The environmental issues come back to money. Power and control comes back to money. People say, we haven't got enough to eat. That's rubbish. There's plenty to eat. It's the distribution that's the problem. And at the moment, the people who control the method of distribution, which is the almighty dollar, you see, the dollar's become the new god. The banks are its disciples. And we're all now, we're now the congregation.
Yeah, well,
maybe
we can't talk about
the banker walked down towards Nazareth.
We harp on about having an actual nationalized bank that doesn't issue money out of debt. And what they do, they just cut the balls off our own Reserve Bank of New Zealand here, and so that we have to borrow off the Japanese and off the Europeans and all the central bankers,
at 8%.
All these Rockefellers and Rothschilds who we're indebted to, and that's how our rate of inflation is determined and everything else. But no one gives a damn, and everyone just thinks paying taxes is patriotic.
Oh, I know. I think it's between us, of course. I think it's every person's or every man and woman's obligation to avoid paying tax to these criminal pricks. Oh, that's what I can't swear on the saying. I've been really good to try and suppress that because I get a bit passionate at times.
You pricks is fine, but we can't go much further than that, unfortunately, on the show. I think that everyone knows what we're feeling here. The problem is, like you say, there has to be some sort of collective effort. And as long as they keep marginalizing us, as long as we're only 1%, 2%, 3%, they can maintain control. That's the sad thing.
And that's where we have the problem, the collectiveness. There is none, like you say. Like I said, you've got the people fighting tax. You got others fighting banks. You've had a couple of people on the show previously, like Dilip Rupa and that, who's actually a very good man. He's been fighting the BNZ for a long time. I had a run-in with the BNZ personally myself, where I got arrested for criminal harassment, all because I visited his house at 9:30 at night just once and made a follow-up phone call to his office. And this was all over the late Philip Veery, who was actually a person who was derived for going against the Wool Board when he created the Wool Corporation, et cetera, et cetera. We didn't think it was fair how the BNZ treated him. A 15-year-old daughter of one of his business partners committed suicide because the BNZ's inadequacy to manage their affairs properly gave him bad advice, and it was quite plain. I mean, I delivered a 7-page investigation and assessment on the whole matter. Then all of a sudden, they brought the Cooper Group in, which is former SAS and all that sort of stuff, diplomatic protection, etc., police and all that in there, and spent over $1 million protecting the CEO, Peter Leonard Thodey, who lives in Remuera. And it's all public knowledge, so it's okay. And tried to drag me through the courts and have me done for criminal harassment. They lost, of course.
They got the men in black on you, pretty much.
Oh, mate, you can even look forward from there to March 1st, 2004. Over 30 special tactics group, fully armed, and over 100 police personnel involved in serving a low-key, apparently, search warrant at my home when I was in Glenross in Manurewa. Closed down the street and all sorts of stuff. Rifles pointed at my kids' heads, and one of them was, still sort of had to be carried around. So, it really pissed me off. I wasn't a happy boy at all. And then they took me to Harlech House, which is no to who. Issued me with a trespass notice too, by the way. They trespassed me from the prior to that from the building they took me to. the police issuing trespass notices to me. Surely they want me, so why would they want to trespass me? But they've tried all manner of different things. They've asked me to work for them. I can even give you the name of the guy who asked me, and because this is a fact, you know, I'll challenge him to say otherwise. That's Mike Puckey, Detective Mike Puckey. I tried to get the full contents of the affidavit that was sworn against me in the court to obtain this dodgy search warrant. And there was a lot of paragraphs blacked out for reasons of national security. You know,
so have Warren Tucker's boys at SIS given you a call too, I suppose?
No, they sent up a guy from the threat assessment unit to have a talk to us and all that. I mean, we made it quite known, you know, that we weren't going to be messed about. As far as we're concerned, they were just tin pot soldiers with little blue badges. And, you know, although, I mean, I like the old school policeman who would be in the community. He'd be known. You know, if you're always taught if you're in trouble, you go to that person, he will help you, et cetera, et cetera. Now you're taught run away from the mug because he'll set you up for something. You know, it's now a them and us, and that's I can't see that changing anytime soon.
And I mean, not to mention, I hear so many stories, and a couple myself. When you go to a police officer for help or about somebody else, they try to convince you to not lay a complaint, right? And if somebody, say, assaulted you, for example, they'll call you up half a dozen times and ask you, are you really sure you want to press charges? Are you really sure? But, you know, if you're smoking a joint in the street or something, oh, my God, you're a criminal, I'm going to kill you.
and if you mess with the money, my God, is that hell and fire and brimstone then? I mean, if a little old lady gets mugged in her house, they'll send a couple of squad cars and do a bit of a yawn and take a statement. But if you've got somebody takes money from a bank, geez, they've got the Eagle helicopter up, they've got armed guards everywhere, they've got people sealing off everything. You know, it's like you've just stolen the crown jewels.
Not hard to see who they're working for, is it?
Oh, exactly. it's the money masters for sure. I mean, it's none of us, you know. I mean, yeah. crime rates and all that are up for one reason only. Everything's a crime now. I mean, they've got legislation that is already passed and in the works where look at us smokers. Well, I've just recently given up, but when I was smoking, I was like a leper, you know. At one stage, we used to be cool. It was actively encouraged. You're cool if you do this. Yep, you smoke this, you're going to be fine. Then all of a sudden it starts killing everyone. The government says that is bad. No, you can't smoke anymore, even though we're making millions of dollars off this legal genocide, because that's basically what it is. They're profiting off mass death, and they know it's killing people.
They formed agreements.
Yep.
A spokesperson, good friend of my parents, spokesperson for British American Tobacco, ex-spokesperson, was down here and he was having dinners with Tuariki Delamore and a whole bunch of the Type 5 guys, you know, friends with Winston Peters. Government and corporations are colluding together to say, how can we best come to an agreement? You guys put warning labels on your cigarette packets, and so we can still profiteer and, you know, make a whole bunch of money in the health system as well.
That's exactly right.
but then at the same time, like you say about this, about pollution, you go into the whole pollution debate. What do they care about all the pesticides that they're using in packaging? What do they care about the fluoridation of water supplies? I mean, I'm sure you're in agreement on all these issues too.
Oh, definitely fluoridization. I mean, people have been hammering on about that for ages, and rightfully so. And even the US now, who, let's face it, the US mindset, US government mindset, because a lot of the people in the US are great people, but their government truly sucks. And they've just come out and actually released reports where, guess what, guys, fluoride is not so good for you. Well, hello. That's nice. It's like the Federal Drug Administration. They'll pass every disease-bearing drug known to man if they get a few dollars slipped into their pocket. Then all of a sudden, 20 years later, when it's killing people left, right, and center, and only after thousands and thousands of people trying to make this known, them completely denying it all the time, say, oh, no, you were right, we're going to remove it, and they'll blame someone else for it. You know?
But we're still right-wing conspiracy theorists for saying it's bad, for saying something proven in the 1920s to kill people is bad. Exactly. We're right-wing nuts.
And the admission of all the dangers of it are all whitewash, you know. All it's doing is like doing it a tiny little bit of damage to your teeth. Well, F off.
Exactly. I mean, look at aspartame. In every artificial sweetener around now, you have it in extra chewing gum, you have it in everything. It's a neurotoxin. It'll break down your system. You know, you put your hands up, you'll start getting small shakes and that. You give it to pregnant females or children, they're not going to develop mentally properly. I mean, this is what they want.
And the government is selling this to kids in our shops right as we speak.
Exactly. And the greenies are
the little bastards.
Yeah, the greenies are promoting it. Buy zero this and zero that because there's no sugar.
Because it's calorie free.
Exactly. Sugar gives you
diet. It contains alcohol.
Yeah,
it contains a methanol branch, you know that, eh? It breaks down to like, it's got PKU, it's got methanol. It's terrible stuff.
It doesn't break down to methanol. It breaks down into formaldehyde.
In the body, it breaks down, yeah. But one branch of it is a methanol branch.
Oh, it's wood formaldehyde. They don't exactly have to embalm you when you die then, do they? They just slip you into the casket. You'll be fine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this could be a new treatment of palliative care. just dose them up on huge amounts of artificial sweeteners before they cark it from the cancer that they got given by the artificial sweeteners, so that the undertakers don't have to embalm them.
But look, all the time, Calvin, I mean, we're angry for all these reasons, and rightly so, because, you know, we've got some spine here. And all the time I get people saying, well, don't get so angry, don't get so angry. I'm like, this is nothing. Me cussing about John Key in my private time is nothing compared to what really should be done, you know?
Oh, mate, I'll tell you. I can give you some stories about governments. I mean, I've been around governments. I've worked for foreign governments before, you know. A lot of the stuff people have written about me, most of it, of course, they get it wrong. I was once what was it? Actually, we'll come back to that because this will give the National Business Review a hard time.
Hold that thought. Anybody who manages to review business should know all this. But of course they don't, which is why they're in business. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. Our very special guest is Calvin Alp, and we'll be back momentarily.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road. When along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man.
Welcome
I've
back.
Been everywhere, man. Across
the show that's going out everywhere. Listeners in about 48 countries, according to the Google Analytics, which I thought was very nice, including about 40 people in China. And there's one guy in particular that I can thank for that, but I won't mention his name on air. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, and, of course, Rush 89 FM in Hamilton. And welcome back to our very special guest, Calvin Alp, who's just about to lay into the National Business Review, or also known as the Swastika, or NBR, short.
Agreed. Deborah Cohn Hill, one of the contributing writers to that, wrote an article about me, about my involvement with the late Philip Verry over this BNZ incident I was discussing earlier. Now, the woman never once phoned me, emailed me, or tried to contact me in any way, shape, or form, but she managed to do this article, of course, deriding me and everything I stand for and who I am, et cetera, et cetera. So she basically interviewed her own typewriter and come up with this with fantasy. Now, of course, did it around Christmas time, so therefore the writer reply wouldn't have come until after that, so people would have had the holidays to digest it first. So the writer reply, of course, destroyed her. Just like earlier on last year, a guy by the name of Tim Hume, who writes for the think it's the Sunday Star Times, I think it is, or New Zealand Herald. Sorry, I'll have to fact check that one. But he wrote an article about me as well. He rang me. I said, look, I'm not really interested in talking to you dorks because you basically take what I say, you take a smidgen of that and create a whole lot of rubbish around it. I said, why don't you just say exactly what I say and then I will wear anything that comes from it. Well, he wrote another one, you know. I mean, the heading itself, sensationalism, let's sell papers, you know, mercenary behind gold bid in Solomon Islands. That was the headline, or words to that effect. I mean, I wasn't behind any gold bid. I've already got a mining license, a gold mining license over there. I've had a 50 square kilometre concession for alluvial gold mining already now. We've been through trial mining operations. Now we know what equipment we need to maximise the gold recovery. We went into the Solomons and did a 50-50 deal with the local landowners because they've still got tribal land, not government-owned land. Everything was fine there. But, man, did we get attacked by the other gold mining companies and other companies that are there. They're there to rape these people, rape their resources, basically treat them like cattle and push them to the side while they take over their country. I'm there to say, hang on, there is a better way to do this. This gold you never thought was valuable until a white man like me come along and said, hey, we really want that because these suckers over here want to buy it for heaps, so can we get it off you? They said, okay, we entered an agreement and there we went. So people like Tim Hume, who goes over there to investigate this type of thing, because Ramsey's there, which is Regional Assistance Mission to Solomon Islands. And I have my own thoughts and theories on them. I've worked with the Solomon government now, both sides, opposition as well, for quite a while. In fact, 3 weeks before the fall of the Zogavari government, I was asked to head a team to investigate what they call the Others. Now, this is... however everyone thinks about it, it's really neither here or there, but it was a government initiated action. They believed it. They wanted to investigate and wondered why certain personnel coming under the guise of Ramsey, who had nothing to do with it, were out in particular areas known by the locals to contain UFOs, alien-type creatures, people foreign to themselves. And we were asked to do that, but that was just before the fall of the Zogavari regime. Now, the reason why they took that government down was because, and it's in Australian intelligence papers that still come out in the court case over the former Governor-General, Julian Motti, when they illegally took him out of the country and basically trampled all over the law. Hence why my last article about the illegitimacy of the Australian and New Zealand governments have created such a furore over everything. Because I basically said, hang on, these guys come into your country, they're importing their laws and that you're just not used to. You know, we're importing stuff that you've got no idea about. We're telling you what it means, but we really know what it means over here. In other words, you're playing our game, but we're the only ones with a rule book. And basically, that country is now just another satellite Australian state, Australian New Zealand state. And I tried to educate the people and say, hey, this is what's happening. Of course, the so-called educated ones who have been educated, i.e. dumbed down, can see no wrong in it. They really can't. You know, even if they wake up tomorrow on a land they used to own, paying rent to people who live offshore, they just don't seem to grasp it. But there are a few, like the people of East Kwaio, who are basically known as Amoi. That means no. You know, they were the ones who, when the Crown decided to send a tax representative over to them to tell them that, well, basically, you know, we've come into the land you own, everything's yours, but you have to pay us tribute because there's tax because we've sucked some people in over here to indebt themselves forever. And no matter how much money you get or how much goods you sell, you'll never be able to do it because even the buying of the goods, you have to borrow the money from us to do it. So, and of course, cut a long story short, those people decided to kill him, take his head off, and 14 of the people who were with him, which I thought was a very, very good start. And there's a lot of things like this that are continuously going on. New Zealand government trying to influence the Solomon government when I was trying to help the Māori government here in New Zealand. My mindset was simple. For years we've had this, you know, us saying, you're Māori, you're moaning pack of so-and-sos, just, you know, it's modern day times. What the hell are you on about? Get on with life. Then you have them saying, hang on a minute, we would have had a very good life if your little trickery and deceit hadn't have taken all those lands and given it to people you guys didn't even know. So here we are fighting each other, you know, and over issues that have really no relevance whatsoever, while the people who created it all are still carving it up in the background. And these are the sorts of things I rally against and try to say, hang on, guys, what are you angry at him for? And when you take it right down to brass tacks, they can actually find nothing. There's no reason to be angry with each other. All because a couple of people, it's like Chinese whispers, whisper in some person's ear, that guy over there doesn't like you too much. You get your back up automatically. Then you go to the other guy. Watch that guy. He's going to get you soon. He hates him. So they both hate each other, and they'd have no idea why. They then bring their mates in. Everyone starts arguing, fighting, complaining. And while they're doing that and taking their eye off the ball, I'm raiding their gardens type thing. This is a very, very simple thing to do. And we're too stupid to see it, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's like these people have never seen a Siegfried and Roy performance.
Exactly.
It's just a switch and grab, isn't it? It's just a switch and grab.
Oh, it's incredibly so. I mean, I've seen some stuff in this world that, you know, well, defies logic. I mean, I'm all about common sense, logic, and reasoning. And if it doesn't make sense to me, then I want to know why. Now, a lot of what government does certainly doesn't make sense. And even to ask yourself why, it's pretty simple, because they don't work for us, never have done. You know?
That's a great point too, because a lot of these academics come out and they argue with me about, you know, why 9/11 couldn't have been an inside job or this, that, and the other, why our conspiracies are all just completely hogwash. But they're coming from a particular view of their own logic, and they're seeing the world in their own sort of, you know, sterile ways, and they haven't really experienced or read enough or gathered experience from reading history to understand just how sleight of hand works, you know?
Yeah, and they honestly believe from their ignorant viewpoint that the government wouldn't lie to them. I mean, God sakes, do me a favor. I mean, here we are.
Lies, they think large groups of people can't lie, though. They think that it'll be leaked.
Oh, yeah, believe me, from my work with various governments, it takes a handful of people to control an entire group consisting of hundreds and sometimes thousands of people. Very, very easy to do. Very easy. Because it's highly compartmentalized. If you're only dealing with a certain area of your pay grade, so to speak, then that's all you know. As far as you're concerned, that data has to be translated and sent on to there. Once it's sent on, that's the end of your involvement. Now, when everything gets pushed upstairs, the person at the top is the only one who sees it all. See, I've had a former Freemason friend of mine. Now, not all of them are bad, but a lot of them are a pack of, you know. He said to me, James Reginald V. McClure was his name, 16 citations in World War II, first medal at 16 on duty at Haifa. He said to me, because I said, why are you guys trying to do all this sort of stuff? You know, why don't you just let people be? You know, let us do what we're naturally meant to do. We have a creative genius that we seem to be have suppressed. We're not allowed to think anymore. We're not allowed to do this. And he goes, think of a skyscraper. I said, yeah, what's that got to do with anything? You know, I thought maybe he's going to talk about the geometry and all that sort of stuff. But no, he didn't. He said, every floor, as you go up, becomes more important than the one below. He said, but at the very top, you have the penthouse. I said, yeah, that's usually where, if you're talking your way, it's like your little pyramid, everything's, you know, knowledge is collected there. He says, but how do you get to find out about a lot of the things that are going on if they are so very secret? He goes, because those penthouses have various rooms and not every one of those rooms agree with the other ones. I thought that was a pretty salient point. You know, a lot of the knowledge is leaked out to the greater masses, as it were, because they want various people within that didn't like the way it was going. They believed, so even me, to some degree, there is a greater good in achieving things without having to involve everyone else. But that's when you get into some dangerous ground, because that way you get your own moral beliefs being enforced on everyone else, hence legislation. You think of all the legislation that's been passed in the past 20 years. Most of it is someone else's moral belief and code. Like if I was drunk, if I got absolutely trashed, got in my car, drove down the road to my house and went to bed, and I damaged no personal property, what crime did I commit? Absolutely none. So what they do is they pass a law just in case you commit a crime. So everything now is we'll fine you, we'll impede your travel, we'll do everything just in case you might have done something wrong. And that's where we get it now.
Meanwhile, in New Zealand, the road toll and the amount of deaths that are being caused on the roads, just in general, drunk drivers and everybody else included, is less than a third of that get killed by the medical institutions.
One quick thing I wanted to ask Calvin about the spin from the media saying you don't agree with the treaty, you think the Treaty of Waitangi is an illegitimate document. Can you clarify that for our listeners?
Okay, there's actually a very good book out called The Littlewood Treaty by Dutray.
Martin Dutray.
Martin. He's actually an excellent guy. I like the guy.
He's a good dude. I've had a long couple of conversations with him. I love
him. I mean, in 2001, he put up a big investigation part into 9/11's Pentagon thing before it became popular, you know, and basically proved that there's no way it was a plane. I mean, geez, even my kids said, how does that work, you know, when they're asking, there's something wrong. When you can't con a kid, you know the game's up. But there's more than one Treaty of Waitangi. You see, the government here operates under the guise that the Treaty of Waitangi, the English version, that had 33 signatures, is the end-all and be-all. There was actually many different treaties written backwards and forwards, and even under international law, it's the one in the native language that takes precedence, and they never once gave sovereignty away. You're not going to declare sovereignty in 1835 only to give it all away, including everything you own and have fought wars for, 5 years later. It's just not going to happen. You know, reality dictates there's something wrong. So basically what they said to King William was, you come over here, there's a whole lot of whiteys who are getting out of control. Can you come over and you govern them and make sure they stick to this, that one thing, the other? We'll do our thing. Anything we need to sort out and negotiate, we'll come together and we'll do it that way. That never happened. The Māori Te Tiriti o Waitangi had just 533 signatures on it. That's the one that should be, you know, should be the one that's used. The government tells you.
Well, you know what's interesting is that everything that should be done seems to be getting turned back in every way you could think of. We'll be right back.
Oh, yeah. Tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh, yeah. It's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
It's business. It's business time.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Well, that's right.
That's all part of it. That's foreplay.
Foreplaying with the New World Order. On the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Thank goodness for American Freedom Radio. Like, seriously, if it wasn't for American Freedom Radio, I don't think this world would still be here. No. Welcome back also to our very, very extremely ridiculously awesome special guest, Calvin Alp. Calvin, welcome back, mate.
Hey.
Yeah, we were discussing over the break about religion, and you know, you've got so much content that you could possibly put out on the show, so we're definitely going to have you back again sometime. So we have our final segment here.
Probably not too good a time to get into religion, but
maybe not.
Your breakdown, your, I don't know, 10 or 15 points on society going to hell in the handbasket right now as we speak.
That might be a better one.
Yeah, oh no, I think the other one, rather than go off on a tirade on the other side, there needs to be like clarification after I say things. So therefore, it's probably best we, you know, don't give people the wrong impression on that side of things. But if we trace how everything's gone and we look back, again, just simply using logic, common sense and reason. Let's go back to 20 or 30 years ago when you got a typical family. That's when actually families, you know, were families. These days it seems okay not to have one. But one man's wage could take care of the mortgage. It could take care of the all the clothes the kids needed, all the groceries. It could pay for the car. It could take them all away on holiday, you know, once a year and get those nice little things that everyone wants and spend family time on the weekends. Now, you got both parents forced out to work, both working their guts out just so they can afford to be broke, and still not being able to get ahead. Now, this is what's happened. Now, what could possibly have happened in 20 or 30 years to enable that? Two things, really. First, you had the feminist movement, which is like, let's burn the bras. We're just as good as you guys. We want to work as well. Sure. Now, how did that come about? Simple, because now we can tax the other half of the population. You see, let's loan more money. Let's do this. Let's encourage everyone to come out.
It was a smart move. And guess who funded the feminist campaigns? The Rockefellers.
Exactly right.
Loaning money to the governments and asking for debt collateral on.
Indeed. And now that they've all done that, are you still there, Will?
Still there, mate. Still there. I think Vinny just had a little blackout there.
Maybe he might have blown a fuse.
The boys at Langley having a bit of fun, but yeah, carry on, Kelvin.
No worries. We where was I? Oh, geez, I tell you, I got
the feminist movement. The whole, I mean,
yeah, we bring him out.
It's become a big government worship syndrome, aren't we?
Well, it's huge, mate. I mean, it's absolutely huge. And then while both parents are working their guts out just so they can afford to be broke over here, that leaves the children unattended to go rampant, go loose, and we wonder why society goes to hell. But meanwhile, we'll blame the parents, okay? We'll force the parents out of the house, but then we'll pull a double jeopardy and we'll blame them for the fact that they can no longer look after the kids. So being the government, we then have to control them. We have to educate the kids, and we have to educate them our way. We have to make them into productive members of the cattle society of tomorrow so they can stand in line in their herringbone sheds, and they can be milked until they're no longer relevant, put out to pasture, where we will give them very little to look after them in their retirement after we've sucked the life force out of them. And this basically is what's happening. We are nothing. We are cattle to these people, you know. But people say, oh, you're just a conspiracy. No, I'm a conspiracy factualist, because if you look around, everything I've just said is fact. You can't deny it. You can't, no matter which way you want to mix it up, it can't be changed. That's exactly what, you know, I'm grateful for people like yourselves, people like your former guests, you know, Jonathan Eisen, even people like the people I know, the Rupert Bulton, people like that who have come on and expressed their parts. Everyone seems to be attacking a small portion of the problem. No one is going for the whole lot. I mean, I've been told, oh, why did you decide to go into politics? Yeah, true. I tried to create the Direct Democracy Party here in New Zealand. We got absolutely hammered. We got no airtime, and of course it was more about character assassination than it was paying attention to the message that was being put forward. And because we weren't suck-ups and we wouldn't, you know, be on our knees for everyone,
I've got a lot of respect for you, and I actually gave a vote for direct democracy. And, yeah, seeing as there's no other party in this country who was willing to stand up against the banking system, the fractional reserve banking system, and around 2005 was when I was waking up and properly and seeing this stuff. And, you know, so a huge amount of credit there, mate, I can tell you. And we do need to take on the system as a whole. You're right. It's not good enough to nitpick here and there. We need to go to the belly of the beast and take it on and see if what it is. And people need to be stopped being afraid of the hand that feeds them, supposedly, because we can feed ourselves.
I agree. I mean, we, you know, I wrote the policies for the party. In fact, I got a bit perturbed over here because you can't get anywhere. Mainstream media is well and truly wrapped up here. They're all bought and paid for. You know, you need to look at the Maldives in government who could actually force a change. They actually, they basically you bend them over, and it's like, you know, made in Parliament. These people. So,
good way of putting it. Do you have a website there we can plug? Or
no, I haven't actually.
That's fine.
It'll probably be able to put it up anyway.
I'd like to thank you very much, and Vinny's back with us now. I'll let Vinny wrap it up, but thanks, mate. We'll have you back on.
No worries at all, guys.
Indeedy doody. And thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for sticking with us through all these technical effing glitches that we happen to have on occasion. You know, I wish it was some kind of conspiracy that would make me feel better, but apparently not. Thanks for listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Our very special guest was Calvin Alp. You can check out that interview on the Kiwi Collaborator section of the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. And we'll definitely have you on again sometime in the future, my friend.
Appreciate it.